Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Welcome to the show, Adam. So great of you to make it.
Thanks. Thanks for that. Were you thinking about starting without me?
I had a thought about our... So we're obviously recording this a little bit in the future of when it goes out, and I don't think that's a secret to anybody. But as yet, we have not heard peep out of the Star Trek Writers Room Twitter account or anybody from CBS about joining the writing staff of the new Star Trek series that's coming out in 2017.
And are you surprised?
Well, I mean... Frankly, a little bit, given the siege that our listeners have kindly laid against them.
Everyone's been blocked who's written them. Yeah. I'm sure we've been blocked, too.
By now, I mean, it's anybody's guess. But one thought I had is that we don't really have any network writing credits to our names. And while I think...
Speak for yourself. I wrote 4 episodes of Blue Bloods, season 1.
I walked my dog past the Blue Blood set 4 times the other day because it is literally 2 blocks from my house.
Oh, fun. Have you run into Selleck?
I have not run into Selleck, but my friend is in the costuming union, and she worked on that show for a season. And when it was over, she said, "Hey, this sweater was Selleck's in the show, and we're getting rid of it. Do you want it?"
Shut the fuck up.
Ralph Lauren sweater, and I totally inherited a Selleck sweater.
You got a Selleck sweater?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's a real thing of beauty. It's one of my prized possessions.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah. But anyways, the idea I had is every show these days has their Talking Dead, their recap show afterwards, right?
Right.
The like talk show format show that happens after the show.
The show after the show.
We're perfect for that, Adam.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
we'll bring our signature good-natured snarkiness, and I mean, I wouldn't even call it snarkiness so much as just like we'd give it a good ribbon and we'd celebrate it at the same time, the way we do Star Trek: The Next Generation.
The show would be ribbed for everyone's pleasure.
yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Dude, I think this is a great idea. I think we would be better suited to that than writing the show.
And that way we get to stroke our egos by having our mugs on camera and everything, too.
You know what, Ben? Fuck it. Let's do it anyway. Like, let's do an after show anyway.
Whether or not, like if they don't authorize it, we just do it?
Let's just fucking do it.
Oh man.
Look, let's hold back a little bit. Like maybe we will, maybe we won't, and maybe if they want to pay us to do it, that'd be cool.
I just don't want them to feel like they don't have to buy the cow to get this yummy, yummy milk.
Oh yeah, they gotta jerk these udders to get that milk out, that's for sure.
So that's the new idea. I mean, like, don't stop telling them you want us to be writers, fair listener, because that tickles us pink every time.
Sure, that's called negotiating. You negotiate ahead of the position that you'll actually accept.
Yeah, that's called leverage.
Right,
It's called dressing for the job you want, not the one you have.
So what we want is to be on the studio lot at Paramount or CBS. What we'll accept is a basement in Tarzana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I can arrange a basement in Tarzana.
I believe it.
All right.
That sounds great. Do we need a hashtag for that?
Hashtag Ben and Adam for a recap show? I don't know.
That is way too much.
Yeah.
Like, all these shows have these recap shows. You got your After the Dead, The Walking Dead after show?
The Talking Dead, I think, is what it's called.
Right, you've got The Talking Dead. You've got your After the Throne, which is the Game of Thrones post-show. You got your Blue Balls, which is the Blue Bloods after-show.
Yeah.
Everyone's very excited about that show.
Mm-hmm. So, I just think that I think we'd bring a unique level of goofiness and love to that type of enterprise.
Much like we do to Star Trek The Next Generation.
Exactly.
See, I see. I'm closing the circle now on this.
This is our audition tape, man.
Yeah, yeah. I see exactly what this is. Everything up until now has led us to this point. Mm-hmm. This is our resume.
Yep.
This is our CV.
Curriculum vitae. Curriculum vulgaris.
Curriculum virulent. Let's begin Season 2, Episode 20, Emissary.
Let us begin it the correct way, Adam.
Oh, someone's got some podcast fluid. This episode was very Klingon The Bachelor, wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it was. I guess it would have been nice to see Worf in a tuxedo, but a girl can only dream.
What do you think a Klingon rose looks like?
Probably more about the thorns and less about the bloom, if I had to guess.
Well put. So the episode starts off with the ship cruising to mediate a dispute.
Well, it starts off with a poker game.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I got ahead of myself. So the episode starts with our second poker scene of the series, which is super fun.
Yep. It's a pretty classic collection. I think it's
I think it's the same poker group as the one the first time we saw a poker scene, except Data isn't wearing a stupid hat.
Yeah, he's not wearing his 1950s accountant hat,
right?
I mean, like, they do have to toss in the perfunctory Data doesn't get an idiom line where he says that he bends his cards,
right?
And so, no, Data, you fold your cards.
Data would not understand rap music if he didn't get idioms.
Yeah. Oh, man. Data listening to a Talib Kweli verse is just like, it'll put his neural net into a real funk.
Yeah, he'd totally shit his pants on that record.
They're all trying to enjoy this game, and Data is being really condescending to Worf, implying that Worf doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. We get, as far as I'm concerned, as much confirmation as we're ever going to need that Pulaski and Worf banged based on how they interact. And then
you can't see their feet underneath the table, but I think you can guess there's some foot action happening under there.
Looks like it's just us, handsome. I'll see you.
I sometimes wonder, because like, we sometimes make jokes on this show that, you know, we came up with ourselves, but then like somebody will send us some like meme or like YouTube or something where somebody makes like a kind of gets at a similar comedic premise to us. And I wonder if anybody has come up with the fact that Pulaski and Worf definitely banged.
You know how we use the Baker Street drop for Wesley?
Wesley, the boy.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
I think we should use like some Glenn Miller song for Pulaski and her love interest.
You're gonna have to pick that out, Adam, because that's an area of music that is very obscure to me.
I can do that.
So, anyways, they get this emergency message that breaks up the game, but Worf has put himself in a commanding lead in terms of scarves. They run up to the bridge, and they're being ordered to head to just kind of a generic set of coordinates that don't, you know, they don't know what they're going for or anything, but it's like it's a big Starfleet priority that they get there. And as they're headed there, they get FaceTime from a nice old lady in an Admiral uniform, which is like a totally different Admiral uniform than the ones we've seen so far. But she informs them that they're going to be meeting an emissary from the Federation who's going to brief them on their mission. And it's like, this is like a matter of top security. So,
yeah.
Shit's pretty tense.
Yeah, they give the ship a set of coordinates. They're like, go meet your emissary at this spot in the galaxy. And it's just out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and so, you know, they're trying to like kind of backtrack what this could be, you know, they're like, well, it's kind of near a sector that's been recently colonized, but it's not actually in that sector. Doesn't really seem to be anything there. That we're not picking up any ships on long range or anything, so we don't know what the fuck is going on. But eventually they get the message that the emissary is being transported in essentially a torpedo tube that can travel at warp 9, and they've taken out the, like, you know,
the bomb part.
Right. They've taken out the guts and put in, like, a bed, like a military cot. And
it's a super efficient way to travel, but, like, have you ever gone on a business trip and gotten, like, the last rental car on the lot? That kind of seems like the situation here. Like, not ideal.
Yeah. So they pull this maneuver where they sort of, like, pull in alongside this probe, grab it in a tractor beam, and then they beam the entire probe onto the transporter pad. And it's like, it's a little bit like thawing Han's carbonite out.
Oh, they've encased him in carbonite. He should be quite well protected. If he survived the freezing process, that is.
There's like a little bit of a procedure toward getting this thing open and getting its inhabitant out. And the first we see of the inhabitant is just like a crazy space mask that has no opening for the eyes. It's real creepy looking.
Yeah, she's wearing like a scuba mask, basically. Yeah. Like a rebreather.
Like a bondage scuba mask.
Oh, yeah, that's why it's familiar to me.
Yeah, scuba gimp, Adam. You know.
It is a guiding principle of a Darth Vader's base. Have you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
But they pull it off, and it is a very lovely Klingon woman. And Riker is like already smooth-talking her with Klingon. Like, he does not skip a beat.
Riker's like, hey, are you Susie Plaxton? You look like that hot Vulcan doctor from The Schizoid Man.
Yeah, that was in this same season.
Yeah, exactly. So they're recycling scripts and they're recycling guest stars. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they felt bad about how much sexism got just dumped on that poor woman's head in that Schizoid Man episode. And they were like, all right, we'll have you back. We'll give you an actual juicy part.
As an actor, I think that's kind of cool. Like, she didn't have much to do in Schizoid Man, and they saw her chops and were like, hey, let's bring you back and put some shit on your forehead.
Yeah, you got a little something called it.
You got a little something called a lot of room on your forehead to put some shit. That's what it is in Star Trek parlance, in casting.
One thing I wondered looking at the Klingons in this episode is I think we know... as people who have been around special effects makeup, that is like foam, essentially. It's like latex foam that stuff is made out of. But I wonder what the texture of it is supposed to be, you know, if Klingons were real. Like, is that supposed to be like real hard surface, or is it supposed to be kind of soft?
Oh, like if it's bone and skull, yeah. Or if it's cartilage, like an ear?
Because if it's like, I mean, if it's like my forehead where there's basically like a layer of skin over bone.
A lot of like, bone.
That's where some bleeding happens, you know? Like if you get a cut there, that shit bleeds like a motherfucker.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, has anyone ever been stabbed in the forehead on the show? Any Klingon at all? I think I'd like to see that. It's like one of those cyst videos on YouTube. You stab a Klingon in the forehead. It's just pus.
Yeah. If anybody's into that, there's a there's another subreddit called reddit.r.popping. And boy howdy, is that a stomach churning couple of hours that you can spend on the internet.
I don't want to click through your Reddit history, my friend.
Oh, I always turn on private browsing when I go to that site.
Well played.
Yeah.
So
my wife knowing that I watch zit-popping videos on the internet.
I don't want my wife to know I watch zit-popping videos during.
Why are you on your phone?
Shut up! I'm almost there. So Riker takes her hand and lifts her to her feet, and we get to meet Kalar, the half-human, half-Klingon emissary that's been sent to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And
she talks about the fact that she's half-Klingon the way that I feel like a lot of white people talk about the fact that they're part Native American. You know?
Like Kalar should be wearing a fringed suede jacket.
Yeah, and like I'm 34th Seminole.
Kalar goes out of her way to say that very specifically her dad was a Klingon and her mom was a human, which to me is like the sexual equivalent of telling someone that Shaquille O'Neal is your dad and your mom is like Betty White. Like like I don't think it works the other way. Like if it's Klingon woman and a human male, unless that human male is Riker.
Yeah, my dad is a Tibetan Mastiff, and my mom is a Chihuahua.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems very, very disturbing sexually.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. Like, I mean, it might have been that the Klingon guy was kind of kinked out in a human-ish way.
Oh, yeah. Maybe his thing was humans.
Yeah. But anyways, this is, I feel like she's an interesting character, and
She definitely gets her teeth from her mom. Did you notice that?
Yeah, she had a nice set of choppers.
You don't want to get cursed with Klingon teeth if you're half human, half Klingon.
They're obviously impossible to floss based on every other Klingon we've seen.
Your bite guard is going to be fucked up if you get those Klingon teeth.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
She and Troy hit it off pretty quickly, and I feel like this is, as much as it's a Worf episode, I feel like it's kind of a Troy episode, too.
That's fair.
We get a lot of Troy character development in this, like more than in a Troy's mom episode, even, because Troy is just kind of one note annoyed with her mother in Troy's mom episodes.
Mm-hmm.
In this, she's like talking to a character that has some kind of, you know, like similar...
They're both biracial.
Right. They both like have... You know, feed in two worlds, and they have an interesting conversation about that.
One of them has a weird forehead.
One of them's wearing dark contact lenses.
They're both into popping videos.
Here, let's pull something up on this pad.
Ooh!
Did you see that?
I'm gonna squeeze it.
This is a standard psych evaluation I do with any emissary that comes aboard the ship.
How does this make you feel? So Kalar gives him a briefing about why she's there. And the deal is there's a ship full of unfrozen caveman Klingons that are on a ship and they're headed towards Federation territory and they're about to be woken up. And if they wake up...
They're not woke yet,
yeah.
But they're pretty sure they're shook.
Yes. I mean,
and you don't want somebody to be shook woke.
Friends, Ben right now is addressing the teenagers in our audience.
And the tweenagers.
So shit's going to go down if these Klingons wake up because they think it's 40 years ago and they think they're still at war with the Federation.
They are like Japanese officers marooned on a small Pacific island, 30 years later, thinking that World War II is still raging.
Right.
And that they, like, need to do the Emperor's bidding. And so this wouldn't really be a problem, except for there aren't any Klingon ships close enough to meet up with these guys and give them the bad news about the war being over before they will traverse this newly populated portion of Federation space, which they were talking about earlier. And if these Klingons see all of these defenseless settlements... They're going to consider that a target-rich environment and light them up, and that'll be a catastrophe. You know what I'm saying?
And Kalar's like, look, this is going to be super easy. We're just going to go intercept the ship and blow the shit out of him. Like, yeah. It's not going to be an issue. We'll just destroy the ship. And Picard immediately is like, whoa, that seems a little aggressive.
Whoa.
Like, I don't know. Maybe there's a plan B we can come up with. Hey, Worf, why don't you work with Kalar and come up with an alternate plan. And Worf is not down with this at all.
Worf totally loses his cool in this. I mean, like, he starts this briefing completely losing his cool. Like, completely drops any pretense of professionalism when she walks in.
Aren't you going to greet me?
I have nothing to say to you.
And then just sits there, like, grumbling through the whole fucking meeting. They all leave, and Picard is like, Worf, what the fuck is up your ass? And he's like, I'm sorry, I'll do the work. I'm sorry.
Worf's the kid in high school chemistry who gets stuck with, like, a lab partner that he hates, and he just can't bear... He can't bear to work with her. And we soon find out it's because they had a relationship together. Because the next scene, they're trying to work on their plan B, which is, like, one of the stupidest sets I think we've seen in all of season two. Like,
it's the first time they came up with a bad science lab set.
Yeah, it's real bad. And I think part of it is that it's super well lit. Like, all the other science labs are pretty dark and cool looking, but this is, like, super hot. There's, like... It looks like a internet jukebox in the corner that Worf walks up to and hits buttons on.
Yeah, he's kind of making a Riker leaning wall out of this jukebox.
And the exposition in this scene is like Kalar is like, hey, you know, I haven't forgotten about that time that we banged, and Worf is like, I kind of have. I've moved on almost completely.
I mean, and this is a hard ruse for him to keep up because we should say that she shows up to work in, like, the sexiest possible clothes.
Yeah.
She's in, like, a form-fitting one-piece shiny red sex outfit.
Do you remember the Spider-Woman comic book of, like, less than a year ago that got a whole bunch of shit because it really sexualized the character of Spider-Woman? On it. I don't know if you're into comic culture.
I don't keep up with it, no.
Anyway, she is dressed as Spider-Woman. And it works for her.
I think that basically in this episode, if we had to chart out the sexiness of Kalar's costume, it's like a bell curve. Like, at the beginning, it's like medium
it's
sexy.
It's a double bell curve, I think, would be more accurate.
Well, it goes up and then it goes back down. It's at the beginning, it's medium sexy. Then this scene, it's like mega sexy. Then the next outfit she puts on is like impossible sexy. Then she goes back to the red outfit toward the middle end, and then she's back in what she showed up with by the end of the episode.
Right, right. And, I mean, I love me some Susie Plaxen, but she plays this pretty broad. Like, she's as in-your-face as her costuming in this scene, and they get into a huge fight. Like, they do that escalating the tension scene where they go line for line, and they get closer and closer, and eventually they're just, like, yelling at each other's faces. You think they're going to kiss, but she turns away and walks out the room.
It really looked like they were about to just get down right there in the science lab.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she walks away, and she goes and finds any room that she possibly can that has a glass table, because all she wants to do is karate chop a big slab of glass.
The glass furniture budget in season two is enormous.
I mean, yeah, like every time you see one of them, you're just like, that fucking thing is doomed.
I mean, you know they're doing a couple takes too, so it's not just one.
Yeah. Like, Susie, can you give us a little bit more pathos when you chop through that table with your bare hand?
Yeah, and you know when they block the scene with the camera shooting through the table, that table dead.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had a chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
It isn't long after this that Kalar does a thing that everyone seems to do lately, which is burn off some steam on the holodeck. So she rolls up to the holodeck and she's browsing the possible programs and comes across one of Worf's programs.
This is her mega sex costume option.
Right, right. It's only gotten more sexy for her. And Worf's program is called Calisthenics, which I think is great.
It's it's so good.
It's like calling one of Riker's programs Mormon Prom Night. Like, it just totally undersells what's actually happening in there.
Yeah. So she goes in, and it is the program with which we are familiar. I think this is like in the first or second episode of this season when Worf and Riker were going head to head with some creepy monsters in here.
And as soon as Kalar walks into the holodeck, she pulls on the power glove.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and she has, like, a pretty good combat scene, and Worf winds up kind of coming and finding her. He, like, watches her finish off the last guy, and she's like, this is kind of a lightweight calisthenics program you have here, Worf.
Yeah, this is pretty weak shit, guy.
Yeah, and he goes and picks up some swords and has a great line of...
Computer!
Increase to level 69.
Yeah, that's basically where they head, because they get invigorated by all the violence, and then they do what they came to do.
Which is smell each other's fingers. I think they got the order all wrong.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that this scene makes very clear is that Michael Dorn was getting some pretty pro manicures while he was playing this character.
Yeah, part of Klingon foreplay is like taking the other person's hand and squeezing it shut with your hand on the outside until it bleeds.
Yeah.
Until you bleed your own blood.
Yeah. I have a Star Trek canon question for you, Adam.
Shoot.
Undiscovered Country, one of my favorite of the Star Trek films. There's a scene where a bunch of Klingons get blasted in zero G, and there's like CG purple blood floating around. And it's the only time I can think of where Klingons are depicted as having purple blood. We know that Vulcans have green blood, but why are they have like normal like stage blood in this scene?
Well, I think you've hit on a pretty significant continuity error. If any of our listeners haven't answered this question, I'd encourage you to wrap it around a can of soup and send it to Ted Cruz.
He'll really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, it could just be an atmospheric thing too. Like human blood is supposed to be blue, right? If it's not exposed to the atmosphere. Maybe that's it's the same with Klingons.
Oh, there's like different gases in the air on a Klingon ship.
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of gas in the air on a Klingon ship.
That's good headcanon, Adam. I really like that.
Headcanon. Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, that's like when you kind of like have to get there yourself. It's never explained properly.
Oh, okay. I get that. I thought you were describing a sex position that that Kalar and Worf were going to get to after this holodeck session, because it gets pretty hot and heavy.
Yeah, and when they're done.
Yeah. So at the end of the scene, the scene kind of goes on for another beat because Worf proposes marriage to her, like on the spot.
He doesn't even really propose. He just starts like yelling shit at the ceiling. And she's like, no, stop, stop, stop. I don't want to be married to you. And he's like, but we are married. And I guess in Klingon culture, if you bang, that's it.
Yeah, a Worf is sort of a save it for marriage type of guy. And now that they got that out of the way, I guess it's on.
I never saw the promise ring on his finger, but I guess it must be on there.
Like if you were to translate what Worf is screaming out to himself, he's like, do you, Kalar, take Worf to be your lawfully wedded husband? Like
to have and to hold, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's like, no, shut up. Don't even say it. Like, yeah. I'm not in.
All those creepy monsters are like getting Hava Nagila queued up on the boombox and getting a chair so they can come over and raise them up over their heads.
They stand up out of their pool of blood, dust themselves off, and like straighten their bow tie.
Hey, Skull Guy. Yeah, creepy turtle man.
Skull Guy does the does that thing where he pats down his pockets looking for the ring that just kills at every wedding.
Yeah.
Little Turtle Guy is the flower girl. We could go on.
Vagina Face Bug Man is drunken best man speech? I don't know.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that plays.
they get in a big argument because she really doesn't live by the kind of codes of Klingon honor that Worf does. And
she picks and chooses. She's a... what is that? What is it called? She's a cafeteria Catholic of Klingon beliefs.
Yeah, and she's also like mostly, I mean, like I think she's like the kind of person that understands that you should know how to fuck and who you want to fuck by getting some experience before you lock your shit down in holy matrimony.
Yeah, I don't get the feeling that Worf is very sexually experienced, huh?
I think that this is his first sexual experience. I think we just saw Worf lose his virginity.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Like, that's the implication, right? Like, when you fuck, you're...
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, and he said from the jump that...
I mean,
that,
his Klingon virginity. We know that he banged Pulaski.
Right, right.
I mean, like, Pulaski's a shiksa. Like, this is marriage material. Kalar's the girl you introduced to mom and dad.
Right, right.
They kind of end this in a poopy fight and do not resolve their dispute in this scene.
They appear to be at an impasse.
Back on the bridge, this Klingon ship is coming in hot, and Kalar kind of talks them through the scenarios, and she's like, okay, like if they're still frozen when we find them, we can beam on board and like stop the automatic thaw process, and we can just wait until a Klingon ship can come and deal with these idiots. But if they are not thawed out, like we're basically going to have to deal with a potential combat situation.
Because we've got
to
euthanize these guys.
Right. And like, you know, the Klingon logic here is pretty easy. Like nobody's going to be pissed on the Klingon homeworld if the Enterprise does what Kalar is advocating, which is just blow them out of the sky.
You think?
Like, no, because they're going to be like, yep, like they died honorably.
Oh, yeah,
good
I
on
guess
them.
So. Yeah.
She's totally thinking with both sides of her brain, but Picard is like never willing to extend that kind of, like he does, he has his own morality in which he is very self-assured. And so he's not going to endorse a tactic that is unnecessarily violent. And so what they decide on is Worf and Kalar get all gussied up in
Klingon regalia.
Yeah, yeah, and Worf like really puts on an awesome lean on this chair. Like he makes Riker's man spread look like Picard's man spread when he sits down in the captain's chair.
Klingon man spread has pimentos in it.
Yeah, delicious on toast. And they start getting shot at by the Klingon cruiser, and they get them on FaceTime and basically, you know, just big dog them into shutting up and sitting down and taking it easy until the other Klingon ship can show up and sort things out.
Yeah, the story they tell is like, look, there's peace between the Klingons and the Federation. Look at me. I'm a fucking Klingon, and I'm commanding a Federation ship. Like, what more proof do you need?
Yeah.
Like, how out of place does this look?
Yeah.
It looks pretty out of place, is the answer.
I fell in some ice and later got thawed out by some of your scientists. Your world frightens and confuses me.
Yeah, you sort of wish they could have, like, you know, had a holo projector on the bridge and put some other Klingon personnel peppered around the other stations, but it's just a bunch of like skinny humans in their pajamas.
Yeah, the contrast is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, so it does take a little while for the Klingon captain to agree to this. But
did you ever feel like the Enterprise was in danger from the Tong's attack?
No, I think that the weapons are like so old that they're just not even really.
They gave them a couple of mini bangers.
About. Yeah, there were some bangers, but they kept saying like the shields were holding, and I feel like if a like this is like one of the big types of Klingon ships. It's not the bird of prey. It's the battle cruiser, and I feel like if the Enterprise gets in a scrap with a Klingon cruiser, it's gonna have some fucking trouble, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was wondering if the Enterprise could ever accidentally destroy it, given its relative age.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be kind of an antique, right?
Right.
They,
I mean, it's a good thing that the Enterprise's record against super old Klingon ships is totally untarnished. Like, like there's no possible way that an old Klingon ship could ever destroy the Enterprise. I think that is something that we can guarantee at this point.
That's a good point, Adam. But before we move on to the final scene, I do want to make the point that I think the Klingons on the bridge of the Klingon ship are like perfectly cast and costumed in this scene. Like, they look like Klingon hillbillies that are coming off of a 75-year meth bender. Like, they look so fucked up. I think it's because they got like real gaunt-faced white guys in the Klingon makeup. And I don't know. It was just real effective for me. Like, I was like, man, those guys do look like they've been frozen and out in deep space for a long time.
You can tell they've got the old FaceTime too without the wide angle camera, because the other two guys really hug in close with the captain to fit in the frame.
It's before they put an HD camera on the front facing.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
So the button on the episode is Kalar's got to beam over to the ship and just sort of complete her mission on like onboarding this crew of Klingons to the idea that they're 40 years into the future and things aren't quite what they remember in terms of Federation Klingon relations. And so Worf and Kalar roll into the transporter room, and Worf is like, "Beat it, O'Brien. I'm going to do this one myself."
Yeah. And they have kind of a touching moment here, you know? She says that, like, she was actually pretty tempted to get married to him, and
Worf totally Jerry Maguire's her.
Yeah. Like I think her concern when he started yelling at the ceiling about Baruch Atah Adonai and all that was Worf was doing it because he was supposed to and not because he loved her.
Hmm.
And I think Worf really did love her. And I think that he really, like, transmitted that fact to her effectively in this scene. And it was kind of touching.
I think it's interesting that in Klingon culture, you yell things at the sky when you want to marry someone. And then you also yell things at the sky when someone dies. I think the relationship with those two is pretty similar to how it is in human culture.
Yeah, I mean, it's cry out to let the dead know you scored a hot babe.
Yeah, or your life is over.
Yeah.
That went dark. I'm sorry. How are things going for you, Ben? Things good?
Yeah, I'm a little bummed out. I just recorded an episode of my, it's a podcast. I don't want to tell you what it's about.
You'll just think it's dumb.
It's usually fun, but
yeah, and that's the end of the episode. Kind of ends on a little bit of a down note, I would say.
Yeah. I like this episode, though. I mean, I think that like a lot of Star Trek episodes that deal with love and romance, I'm often baffled by the kind of retrograde understanding of how that's supposed to work that's evident in this old show, you know, from 30 years ago. But all in all, I enjoyed myself watching it, and I thought the plot was pretty fun, and there's a couple obvious holes, but overall it moves, and it's not an insane trash fire like some of the recent episodes. This might seem good compared to the other shit that we have just recently watched, so
sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we might be getting some proximity bias to the episodes that came before. I think it just proves again, like, when you give Worf's character something to do, he's a really interesting guy. And, you know, like, 9 out of 10 episodes, he's like the cigar store Indian of of the storyline, and he's just, like, there. And I was really sad to see Kalar go. Like, I know she's going to be back for a couple of episodes, as I recall, but, like, man, if she was more of a regular, a featured player in the cast, I think it would just be a lot better for Worf's character development, but also like in terms of entertainment value, I thought she and Worf together were great.
Well, and Troy as well. Like, Troy has also really not gotten much character
development. Yeah, what does she have to do? She doesn't have a friend since Yar died, and it seemed like this was the first friend that she's made in a long time.
Right, and, like, this is, like, the first time we see what a great counselor Troy is. Like she starts kind of talking to Kalar in a semi-professional tone after they've already kind of been friendly with each other, because Kalar comes out of...
You
one
can
of these
tell
arguments.
She wants to go to Ancestry.com with her right away, and then she just sort of chills out on that idea.
Yeah, I mean, like, Kalar is pissed because of this confrontation she's had with Worf, and catches Troy, like, trying to counsel her, and she's like, no, and Troy suggests the holodeck, and you can tell that, like that's some, like, psychologist jujitsu that Troy just pulled on her, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. Like, this is, like, the first time I can remember, like, really seeing Troy as good at her profession in a way that we can see.
And it was really economical in terms of that character development, too. Like, I don't think Troy was on screen very long at all, but, like, in terms of character density, like,
and
there
she's
was
not
a lot
just,
there.
Yeah, and she's not just there to be, you know, exposition about somebody lying or whatever. She's like, there to, like, actually... be a three-dimensional person.
Yeah, they really did a lot of things right with this episode.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Were there any other scenes you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, there's one last scene I did want to talk about, which is I think one of the later scenes in the science room when Worf shows up to do some kind of like mop-up on the plan with Kalar, and he brings Data, and Data winds up just kind of being like third wheel to their further lover's quarrel.
This is like the second straight episode where Data's used as a cock blocker.
It's amazing how often he winds up playing that role. He's like, he's got this perfect fly on the wall view on mammal mating strategies.
Yeah, he has absolutely no self-awareness for being used in that way. He's just interested in people.
Yeah, you would think after a little while, I'd be like, Worf, I don't know if I do want to go down to the fucking science lab with you and your girlfriend. She seems pissed right now.
Yeah, between that lack of self-awareness and him just sticking his appendages into things, like, he's not very streetwise, is he?
No.
Well, hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find a drunk Shimoda in this episode?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I had to give it to Worf for completely losing his cool in the meeting at the beginning. Worf has a long history on this show of being a hothead, but he's usually a hothead in circumstances that merit it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, he is so unprofessional in this meeting. Like, he doesn't... And he doesn't even acknowledge it. Like, I can't even imagine being like, well, let's get the meeting started, the way Picard does.
Yeah, like, especially when the Admiral is like, Captain Picard, you are ordered to eat this woman's shit. Like whatever she says goes, you've got to fulfill this mission. And I guess Worf isn't under that same order, because Worf is just a total dick to her the entire time.
Yeah, and... really just doesn't keep his cool in a way that I felt was very Shimoda-like.
Yeah.
And we should say, Jim Shimoda is our favorite character from episode 2 of the series. And he gets real drunk, and we liked that, so we named an award after him.
Yeah. We always think about Jim Shimoda every episode. I also found Worf to be my drunk Shimoda, but for a completely separate event.
Okay.
So... Worf's big plan is that instead of blowing this Klingon ship out of the sky, they're going to dress up as Klingons and pretend that he's the captain and Kalar is the first officer of the Enterprise.
Right.
Did you think, like, actually transferring command to him was necessary? Because that's what happened. Like, he does the thing. He convinces the Tong that he's the captain of the Enterprise and it's all good. And then... you know, they end communications, and Picard and Riker come out of the ready room. They're like, hey, great job on your first command. Worf is like, great, I transfer command back to you, Captain. Like, That wasn't necessary at all. I can only imagine that Worf knew it wasn't necessary and somehow convinced the captain that, like, to help him get into character, that was the only way he was going to be able to do it. Like, look, man, you got to give me the command codes. You got to make me captain. It's the only way this thing is going to work. And yeah. Picard, for some reason, is like, yeah, go ahead. So the idea of Worf asking for command of the ship and getting it, I think, is a totally drunk Shimoda move. I think I might give a little half Shimoda to Picard for actually allowing that to happen. That didn't make sense at all to me. Because he didn't have to be captain to pull that off. Good times.
Fair enough.
I am the cutest of all. Lock phases on that vessel. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
Next episode is Season 2, Episode 21, Peak Performance. A simulated war game turns deadly when the crew is ambushed by a Ferengi battleship. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
This is where they put Riker in a jalopy, right? To fight the Enterprise, and then the Ferengi think that that's a pretty weird scene, and they decide to stick their giant ears into it.
Yeah, and I think this is also the one where Data and a weird alien are, like, playing some video game against each other where they put their fingers in, like, in those, like, automatic milking machines that they put on cow udders and, like, wave them around.
See, that part I don't remember.
You don't remember that part?
You remember the weirdest parts, Ben.
I just remember the, like, the stuff that that made you remember me the sexual weird deviant French accordion. That I am today.
You remember the weird French accordion that looked like jerking off bongs. And you remember the cow milker video game.
Yeah,
I think I remember more about this one than most other early season episodes. I'm kind of excited to see this one again.
Yeah, me too. So, what we have to do now is say our goodnights and good lucks to everybody. I promise that we will get back to opening Star Trek trading cards probably next episode or so. No good explanation for why we've taken such a long break from that, other than we had other stuff we wanted to talk about. But don't worry. You can find us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm at BenjaminAHR, and Adam is at Cut for Time. We have a rollicking good time all week, every week, using the hashtag GreatestGen, talking to people about the show on Twitter. You can also go to Reddit. The Maximum Fun Reddit is /r/MaximumFun, and the GreatestGen one is /r/GreatestGen.
One of those is for good behavior, one of those is for bad behavior. I think you know which is which.
You know which is which. We're still running our contest. Jim Shimoda plus contest at gmail.com. Just take a pic of your 5-star iTunes review, send it to us, and there's two ways you can win a t-shirt. Funniest review is going to be one reward, and random selection is going to be the other reward. So, I think the good game theory is just write the funniest one you can, because you put yourself high in the ranking for one and you still got a chance at the other.
I'm not against something that's ultra complimentary to win that. I mean,
okay,
I'm not against that. Also, Ben, shout out the email address, because you gave the subject line as the email address on that.
Like Jim Shimoda plus contest at gmail.com.
Oh, really? So that is a totally separate email address that people are using. That's not a subject line thing.
No. The email address, you can add a plus on a Gmail and it'll like put it in a special box.
Whoa, I've been misinterpreting that from the start. I thought that was a subject line thing to do. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot, so I doubt any of our listeners were as mistaken as I have been.
Yeah, well, I'll stay up all night wondering about that now. please enter the contest.
We edit these episodes, right?
Yeah, we're trying to get to 500 iTunes reviews, and we really appreciate all the great ones. So if you've already written one, you are just as eligible for this contest as anybody.
It's not just one shirt. Like, once we get to 500, we are just going to make the one shirt and stop. I mean, initially we're going to make the one shirt, but 500 is the threshold at which we can start producing fun merch. So
yeah,
that's pretty big for us.
It's going to be great. We should thank Dark Materia for our music. What fun it is to listen to that music. I, like, get it stuck in my head all the time.
It's a banger.
It is a banger. Makes that ship rock.
You might want to listen to that in the bedroom more than watching popping videos. Really puts you up over the top. That's a deep cut right there.
Do we have any other business we need to attend to?
I think we're done here.
Yeah, I think we've done all we can. It's been fun talking about this episode. I look forward to talking about the next episode of Star Trek The Next Generation with you on our next episode. Good night.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.